Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, as you may have heard on Around the World slot yesterday, there's been a controversy in Australia over a less than flattering portrait of their richest woman. And recently unveiled portrait of King Charles in the UK has been criticised by some for looking hellish. So what makes a good portrait? Or is this a completely subjective judgment? Kathleen James Chakraborty is Professor of Art History at UCD. Kathleen, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for inviting me in. I think what makes a good portrait is in the eyes of the beholder. Above all, of course, you want to have a recognizable likeness, but almost everybody wants to be flattered as well. And what makes flattery? Is it just being handsome? Is it being in the right clothes? Is it with an interesting or exciting background that says something about you? And then also, what makes a good work of art, which since the invention of photography has not always been the same thing as exactly what makes a good portrait. It's not just about the likeness. It's also about the artistic expression, which in many cases in the last 150 years or so has moved fairly far away from straight representation.
No, but many of those cases, though, are is where the subject of the portrait has said, yes, you can do a portrait of me. Interestingly enough, in that the Australian version of that, Gina Rinehart, who's the richest woman in Australia, but has been a very controversial figure, the artist who did that portrait was deliberately not being flattering, and apparently has done that to other people too. And he's an Aboriginal artist, so he's saying something completely different in that kind of context.
Yes, and he has the right, of course, as an artist to do that. Whether it's what someone who commissions a portrait wants to have done is another matter. And I think that's how much it's an independent work of art or a portrait. There's a very good show on at the National Gallery of Ireland now of faces that are not portraits and that are very much about artistic expression rather than being commissioned portraits. And so I think that puts it in an entirely different situation when it's about the artist's expression. And, of course, the artist has the right to paint anybody they want. Mm. But I can understand if you have had your portrait commissioned for a public display and it's as unflattering as that one. I have to say, if I were the sitter, I might not be very pleased.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. But I suppose the difference between the two I mentioned, the one of Gina Rinehart, that's an artist making an independent comment. The one of King Charles, which was commissioned by him, which he sat for, and as you say, there has to be an element of the subject of the portrait has to be flattered by it. So is that art, strictly speaking? Is it a kind of a photograph in a way?
Well, I think one of the interesting things about the portrait of King Charles is that it's not just a photograph. And I think the challenge to the artist of making sure it wasn't, because we all know what King Charles looks like.
Yeah, sure.
And so making it something interesting enough so that we would talk about. And I think it's this use of color above all that's done that. And it's interesting too, because what you notice about that portrait above all is the color, is the red. If you look closely, there's the butterfly. But I think were it a more conventional portrait, you would probably look at the red of the uniform and not so much at Charles's face. Mm. And so by having everything red, we don't focus on the uniform. We don't focus so much on that official role in the military. And instead, eventually we do look at him and maybe we get to the butterfly as well, which is something he apparently requested or suggested.
Yeah. What do you think the butterfly represents, or did he want to soften his image?
Oh, I think it's about his interest in nature. And I think that as king, he's not allowed to say very much or do very much that could be construed as political. But I think we know that as Prince of Wales, he was very interested in the environment. And I think that's a fairly subtle and uncontroversial way of dealing with that. I don't think most of us think butterflies are seriously political.
Yes.
And very controversial.
No, not particularly. And the red, though, I mean, because I saw online it sparked a million conspiracy theories about that he's a vampire and, you know, literally people thinking that. What do you think the artist meant by that?
I think the artist is trying to move beyond the photography, and the uniform that he was selected to pose in is one of those scarlet red coat kinds of uniforms.
Yeah.
And so I think it was dealing with that. And I think, I'm sure the artist is delighted that it's being so talked about. Whether he's delighted it's so controversial is another matter. But I think it's a real challenge to do royal portraits well. Charles's mother was painted many times, sometimes very flatteringly, sometimes very banally, and sometimes, as in a portrait by Lucian Freud, probably the most famous artist who ever painted her, extremely unflattering and certainly not Freud's best work either. I think Freud's best works are more psychologically insightful, and I think it's very hard to be psychologically insightful about the Queen when you're meeting her in, I don't know, the year 2000 or such, when she's become such an icon. And it's fairly small also. One of the interesting things about the portrait of King Charles is it's really large. It's larger than life size. So it has a kind of presence, I imagine, when you're there that's very different from just looking at it on Instagram. But I don't think the portrait of the Queen that Freud did was, it's just a headshot, was so large, but it's certainly extremely unflattering. And not all of Freud's portraits were flattering, but often you had the sense, even without knowing the sitter, that maybe you were getting some insight into the person. And I didn't get that sense.
Yeah. Well, I mean, imagine it's close to nigh on impossible to get some sort of a psychological insight into someone who has spent their lifetime preventing any such psychological insight. That's literally what her job was. So the temptation might be to make some sort of political point or sociological point. In the case of Charles's portrait, there are many possible interpretations of taking the decision to, you know, to have it. He looks like he's drenched in blood, potentially. That could be a point that the artist was making.
I doubt it's the point the artist is making, because remember, this is something that King Charles was willing to sit four times for an hour for the artist. So one doubts that there was something quite that controversial going on, although in light of contemporary political discussions about colonialism and so forth, it's very easy to interpret it that way. And many people will, and I'm not saying it's wrong to do so, but I doubt that was intentional. And portraiture is certainly political, but I think it's interesting in this context that the British monarch, who was the greatest patron of the arts and had the most sophisticated portraits painted of him, Charles I, those portraits were extremely compelling as propaganda, but he was a very unsuccessful monarch, executed and certainly not the precedent that Charles wants to follow for his reign.
And in the era before photography existed, how reliable are the portraits of monarchs in the sense that, you know, many of them had limps and one leg and syphilis and all the rest of it? So did they really look like that at all?
They vary enormously in their accuracy. And it's certainly something that when we come up across a portrait and we don't know really who it is, then determining whether it is one of these monarchs by their looks can be incredibly difficult. The Habsburg family were known for their inbreeding that produced very prominent jaws that were not particularly beautiful. And they're often clearly reduced in some portraits more than in others of particular figures. But I think it's really in the 16th century that royal portraits take off. And I think it's interesting that almost all of our listeners today can probably recognize Henry VIII or Elizabeth I, but probably can't tell the difference between George I and George II or George IV and his brother William IV, that some of these images become really iconic and some don't. And Henry IV's paintings by Holbein and Elizabeth I by very many people have become so iconic that when we see these figures in an ad, in a television series or whatever, we know who we're looking at. Not necessarily just from the face, but the clothing, the red hair that Elizabeth had that was later a wig.
Kathleen, thank you very much for coming in to talk to us today. That was Kathleen James Chakraborty, Professor of Art History at UCD.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.